Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:07 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 12th. Well, it looks like Theresa May has won the confidence of the Conservative Party, and the pound has been rallying just about all day. It's pulled back a little from the high of the day immediately after the announcement, but we're getting a little bit of trading around this news. But this also now turns the question back onto: when exactly are they going to vote on the deal, and is there any real likelihood that that Parliament is going to support it? Then, of course, there is the question of what happens if they do not support it. Is there then going to be a referendum? If there is going to be a referendum, what is the question going to be? Is the question going to be a simple in or out question again, or is it going to be accept the deal or leave without a deal? That, of course, would be another step down the line, that accepting the Brexit decision and then just giving two alternatives for how to enact it. From the perspective of a lot of people that have respect for constitutionality and the democratic process, then that latter, way of thinking about it is perhaps how the market would, or at least politicians would, feel that that was the only way they could justify having another election. One thing that we've seen in a number of countries within the Eurozone, most particularly in Ireland, is that when people are offered a referendum on an important piece of European legislation, that they've been asked to go back and think about it again. In other words, politicians tell them, well, that was the wrong answer, people, go back and give us the right answer. Hopefully that is not what's going to happen in the UK. It would certainly be seen by a number of UK voters as a degradation of the democratic process and the constitutionality of the referendum process on top of that, but it can't be ruled out. So when we start to think about that in terms of UK assets, well, there was, I think, a reason why when vast majority of European indices were up in here today, the pound lagged, or excuse me, the FTSE 100 lagged for most of the day and was able to recoup that underperformance towards the end of the session. But we're coming from a position of relative underperformance, and there is certainly a potential here for European assets to unwind short-term oversold conditions. For the FTSE 100, it really needs to push back above this 7,000 level. The FTSE 250, having dropped below the 18,000 level, didn't quite get back above it in here today. But again, there is a short-term oversold condition here. Now, the big question is whether it is going to be able to manage to rally enough to break the succession of lower rally highs. But certainly we have oversold conditions on a number of these European indices. What I find particularly interesting is in the Greek market that we are starting to see some of the first evidence of a return to outperformance, that while the vast majority of European indices were trending down in the latter half of November, Greece was actually going upwards, and it has now broken its sequence of lower rally highs, evident from just about all of this year. Well, Greece has exited its rescue program. The market is only a fraction of where it was back before the crisis, but it has been going sideways since about 2012. Well, it's at the lower side of the range right now, and it is bouncing. That's not something that we can say for a significant number of the other European indices. The CAC, for example, does have a very toppy-looking activity, but it is working on a rally in here to unwind the short-term oversold condition. Now, the other big point, of course, is that the ECB has ended its quantitative easing program. Now the big question is whether they're going to have to redeploy it, considering the challenges that continue to mount in a number of European countries. But the euro was in positive territory in here today. It was up about 47 ticks, and it has held a sequence of higher reaction lows since the middle of November. But by the same token, there is still a sequence of lower rally highs as well. So it is at a decision point here, and The more important point, I think, is that it has been trending down all year. And if we're going to see a real break in the dollar's dominance, well, then the euro is going to have to break its sequence of lower rally highs. And while there are a lot of people making arguments about the relative strength of the dollar, I think there is no point talking about a strong currency unless you're comparing it to a weak currency. And the dollar has got some significant medium-term challenges, not least in terms of the projected deficits of the US government. But that has to be weighed against the outlook for Europe or the intention of Japan to persist with its quantitative easing program. The yen was weaker in here today, and the dollar continues to hold its sequence of higher reaction lows against it. Well, that then, if we're thinking about a bearish dollar argument, well, then we have to ask the question is what currencies are going to rally against it? If it's less likely that you're going to get a rally by the euro or the yen, well, the pound is certainly looking oversold right now, but of course there are these very big questions outstanding with regard to the UK. Then what about emerging markets? Well, the biggest of those is the renminbi, and the renminbi has at least paused around this 7 level. Well, the trade war rhetoric is starting to get ratcheted down. There is certainly the I think the intention by China to at least comply with some of the USA's demands in terms of trade openness and the reduction of tariffs, but there is nothing that is going to deter China from its objective of becoming a technological leader. So that's, I think, where there is room for negotiation. But at the moment, at least, the trade war rhetoric is being ratcheted down, and that is positive for the renminbi. But I think when we look at the emerging markets, what we really need to do is look at them in aggregate. And the MSCI Emerging Markets Currency Index, which obviously has got a big weighting of renminbi, paused in the region of the trend mean last week, but it still has its sequence of higher reaction lows. Well, this is, I think, obviously going to be heavily influenced by what happens with the renminbi, because the appetite for currency strengthening by other emerging markets is going to be very much influenced by what happens with the renminbi. When you think about, for example, the Indonesian rupiah, that it is right in the region of its trend mean, and it has closed its overextension following a significant deterioration for most of this year. Now the big question is whether it is going to be able to hold that advance, and the 15,000 level is going to be potentially tested. Now the question is whether it's going to hold. The Indian rupee is also a rather interesting one here, that it had closed its overextension relative to the trend mean, and it's been pulling back over the last couple of weeks. Well, we have a new central bank governor, and there's a strong likelihood that India is, or that the Modi administration is going to try and buy the election. And that's almost to be expected from a populist administration. Well, the stock market is beginning to pay attention to that fact, and we had a pretty significant upward dynamic yesterday, and this upside follow-through in here today. Well, that at least gives us something to base the potential here that the Indian market has probably seen the worst of its selling, and now we're starting to see the banking sector bouncing from the region of the trend mean. So there is the potential here that Indian asset prices are going to inflate if the Modi administration does in fact go for significant fiscal stimulus, or that the RBI, with a politician-friendly governor, now decides that it is going to be in his interests and in the interests of the country to have credit growth. So India is certainly one of those countries that could benefit significantly from dollar weakness. And of course, the appetite by investors for emerging markets. The South African rand had been weakening in the first couple of weeks of December, but it strengthened up somewhat in here today, and there has been a sequence of lower rally highs for the dollar since September. Well, it continues to pause around the 14 level, and the dollar would really need to fall back below it in order to really confirm that we're back in a rand-dominated environment. When we look at, for example, the Johannesburg All Share, the index is right in the region of that 50,000 level. Well, 50,000 is a big psychological level for the index, and it's where the market's been pausing since 2014. So it's a natural area where we might anticipate some support starting to come back in. Well, the other point, of course, is that when we look at commodity prices, they have been largely range-bound for nearly 3 years. Well, the dollar has been rather resurgent over the same time period. If we were to get some dollar weakness, then that would really be a green light for the commodity complex. I think it is worth highlighting that the best performing industrial metal this year has been uranium. And it is at new recovery highs. It certainly paused over the course of the last while, but that's a break of the downtrend. And as long as it's sustaining the move above the trend mean, well, we can conclude that this is a recovery scenario. Well, you might remember that there was news in the early part of this year that Cameco was actually out buying uranium rather than producing it itself because it was cheaper to do so, because the price was so low relative to production costs. Well, with uranium prices now starting to push higher, that is well, that has begun to translate into a more positive environment for the uranium sector, and Cameco does appear to be coming back towards the potential for a breakout from what has been a 2-year base formation. Then, if we look at copper prices, we continue to have this triangular pattern evolving. The price was pretty steady in here today, down only very marginally, but if it can sustain a move back above that 285 cent level, well, then we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But it really does need to do that in order to, I think, convince investors that the worst is past. Oil prices were in negative territory in here today, and that's. But what we have seen has been a significant loss of momentum for a trend that had gone down for, I think, 7 consecutive weeks. Well, I do think that the most likely scenario here is that we're going to get a reversion to the mean, quite whether it just goes sideways and allows the mean to catch up, or whether we get a rebound, is not yet clear. But I think considering just how quickly prices came back and the efforts underway to curtail supply both in Canada and OPEC and Russia, well, that would suggest that there is scope here for a rebound in the oil price. I did go to see, or excuse me, I did tune in, I should say, to Jeff Gundlach's talk yesterday. One of the points that he was making most clearly was that the policy of the Federal Reserve to continue to reduce the size of its balance sheet is a headwind for stock markets. But when we look at, for example, the yield curve spread and other lead indicators for future recessions like PMI indices and unemployment, well, the yield curve has not quite yet been inverted. And when, for example, we look at we look at that yield curve spread, it's certainly come in a lot, and it's currently around the 14 basis point level. It's been popping around between about 11 and 14 for the last week, but the trend is still contracting. And there is the possibility that it is going to invert before the end of this year or at the beginning of next year. We're a lot further along in this tightening process than we were 18 months ago. This tightening process has been going on for quite some time already. One of the more important points that Gundlach was making was it was in response to a question, how much quantitative easing or tightening is required to correspond with approximately a quarter point hike or decline in the Fed funds rate, and the conclusion was that it's approximately 200 billion. Well, the Federal Reserve is looking at reducing the size of its balance sheet by about 600 billion next year. So that is going to be three, potentially the equivalent at least of three interest rate hikes. That gives them ample scope to pause now. Well, if they raise interest rates in December, then that could quite likely now be the last one. The Federal Reserve has been tightening with both levers. They've been reducing the size of their balance sheet and increasing the Fed funds rate, and that has caused indigestion in the market. If they persist on this route, then they're going to create not just the conditions for a recession, but also for significant downside in the stock market, because confidence has already been damaged. Well, they know that, and they obviously want to try and smooth out the cyclicality of the market. They've been very clear in stating that. But if they're going to do that, well, then they need to at least ease up on one of those levers. So they want to reduce the size of their balance sheet. That's very clear. So that suggests that they're going to pause on the interest rate front. Well, if they pause on both, then that would be a green light for speculation again, and we could see markets break on the upside, and we could potentially enter a bubble. In fact, that is generally what you get when you find public officials that think that they can tame the cyclicality of the market. But if that is to be credible, then we would really need to see some very clear action to support the market from central banks. And so far, it's been absent. So that's the big question that's outstanding. One of the things David has said for years is that monetary policy beats most other factors most of the time. And I think that that is as true today as at any other time in history. Now, when we look at what's going on in the bond markets, well, there is an awful lot of supply that needs to be refinanced next year. So we're talking at approximately in the region of about $900 billion before we even begin to think about the additional money that needs to be borrowed to fund the deficit. So that's not bullish for bonds when you get that kind of additional supply coming onto the market and the Federal Reserve is reducing the size of its balance sheet. Well, yields are right in the region of the trend mean right now. They came right down to test the sequence of higher reaction lows, are really that 2.8% level, and we're now starting to see a bounce. So the extent to which the yield bounces is really going to give us a clear indication of just how much, or I think whether we are in fact in not just a medium-term bear market for bonds, but potentially whether this is in fact the end of this bull market. Well, when we look at the total return on bonds, and I haven't looked at this in a while, well, I've been saying for quite some time that it's the most important chart in the world because it was the most consistent, and it has lost consistency. There has been a very clear loss of momentum since 2015, and we've had a rally over the course of the last few months, which has is now challenging the sequence of lower rally highs. Well, the question now is whether it can continue to hold this advance and do better from here. If this index breaks below 2050, well, then we're talking about a completed top formation. That would equate with perhaps 3.5% on the 10-year yield, but that wouldn't, and a lot of people are looking at 4, but that would really represent clear technical deterioration for what was previously the most consistent trend in the world. So that I think is that is still an index that we need to continue to pay attention to. Now, if we look at what's been going on in on Wall Street and here today, then the Nasdaq was in positive territory initially, but has been giving up the rally just about all day. So Now the big question is whether this low, just below 6,600, is going to hold, and a lot is going to really hang on the Fed's decision over the course of I think that's on the 19th, so 1 week from today. Then, when we look at the Dow Jones, that's full of the kinds of companies that are rather exposed to the trade war, and it has been subject to really quite acute volatility, and it did break down, although very briefly, 3 days ago. So now the question is whether this evolving range is going to persist. The one big, I think, or the most popular prognostication for next year among investors is that the market is going to range. I'm rather doubtful of that. I think that considering the uptick in volatility and the fact that we've been ranging for a year already, that it's unlikely that the market is going to range for all of next year. We're either going to get a break on the upside or we're going to get a break on the downside. And that's, I think, the most important thing to bear in mind, that ranges are explosions waiting to happen. I think the catalyst for either move is likely to be what we hear from the Federal Reserve, and markets will be thin going into the Christmas period. So that's certainly something to bear in mind. Now, when we look at the gold price, well, gold itself has been very steady over the course of the last few sessions, and it's right in the region of its trend mean. If it can break up and out of this, or break at least above the trend mean, well, then that would signal that we're going to go back up and test the upper side of the range. But to do more than that is probably going to require a weaker dollar, and that's not yet apparent. Silver prices have been ranging below $15 for the last few months and are now back testing the upper side of that range. So this is where I think people will start to ask questions. Platinum prices have been falling for the last 6 weeks, but today was the first evidence of some support starting to come through. If that support holds, well, then we'll have a higher reaction low. And palladium continues to represent clear relative strength within the precious metals sector, and it was at a new closing high in here today, but it continues to hold its sequence of higher reaction lows. Then I think a lot of people are going to be paying particular attention to what happens to Amazon. And the share was up $20 in here today, but it's right now in the region of the trend mean. We've had a substantial pullback, and there have been occasions previously on which Amazon went sideways for a pretty significant period of time. Well, as long as it's holding the $1,500 area, then I think a lot of people, if they have sat through the pullback and they've seen the bounce, well, a lot of people will have thought that $1,500 was a nice place to be buying Amazon. That suggests that their stops are probably right below the lows. And therefore, it needs to hold that $1,500 area if this is going to continue to represent support building. So far, it has, and that's been one of the factors that has deterred a lot of people from getting panicky about this market. They've been conditioned to sit through swingeing pullbacks and to buy the dip. And as long as that continues to work, then that's likely to arrest a panicky environment. But if Amazon does in fact start to break downwards, then that is likely to really question the outlook for the broader market as well. Then the cloud computing sector, which Amazon is obviously a part of, has paused in the region of the trend mean, but it has held up really comparatively well compared to the semiconductors index. Semiconductors continue to look like a distribution below the top, and unless it can sustain a move back above the trend mean, this is still looks like a completing top formation. So against that background, we're still seeing the relative performance of the highly defensive sectors. That alone tells us that we are late in the cycle. I think that's another point to bear in mind. We're at a very interesting juncture right now because the range of potential outcomes is becoming increasingly polarized. So I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.